You're listening to What the Folklore, making sense of senseless tales.
Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, the princess, she walked happily home. Tra-la-dee-dee-hi-dee-ho, she lived happily ever after.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to What the Folklore, Making Sense of Senseless Tales. I am your reader, Carmen.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Gordy. I hope I can hear myself when this comes out.
Why would that be a factor?
Well, because we got new microphones, and now the waveform's real, real small.
Yep, it's really concerning, but we found that when the waveform was big, we sounded shouty and terrible. So now we're going for a more intimate look at What the Folklore. Also because it's late, I am sleepy, and we're about to do a really long story.
Yeah.
So this is a good choice to be quiet.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go for it.
Okay, so, Gordy, you normally explain what we do, so why don't you do that?
Our usual MO is to... Carmen is going to read a fairy tale to Tyler and I, one that has probably not been covered by Disney or DreamWorks or Pixar or any of those other movie studios. We want to go way out into the wild, wild west of fairy tales and find some weird ones.
This week's one is the one that has been suggested for a while by our listener Carl with a C, and I finally got through this friggin' tale. This is going to be the second branch of the Mabinogion, the Mabinogi of Branwen. The Mabinogion is the epic Welsh collection of tales that kind of covers a lot of history and crazy
times. How
many
nights does it take to tell it?
Probably about 40.
Are any of them Arabian?
One.
There's one Arabian night and then 39 in Wales.
Actually, there are a lot like in Ireland and Britain too. So it's the Greater British Isles.
Yeah, the whole experience.
Yeah, but with a jaunt over to
briefly
yeah. Arabia for one night.
They got sick of all of the weird Gaelic pronunciations.
It's a hot skip and a jump.
So I did look up the pronunciations. This was difficult because Google doesn't know what I'm asking. So I looked up a dictionary of Welsh consonants and vowels to kind of try and figure out on my own how things are supposed to be. I found a list of vowel and consonant pronunciations and then tried to like slam jam these into the names so that I might be a little bit closer, but there's no guarantee. I'll probably still mangle these, and some of them have no English equivalent to the sound, so...
You will mangle them and I will make up alternatives.
Sounds good.
That are easier to remember for me.
Yeah, we'll just insert our own sounds.
All right, so this one's going to be a long tale, so let's get on into it. You ready?
Yeah, sure, let's do it.
All right. So this is the second branch of the Mabinogion, the Mabinogi of Branwen.
I didn't know it was Welsh before. I do now, for sure.
Bendigid Wren, son of Fleer. Yeah. Okay, so the double L is basically a lisp, apparently, according to this one source. So, son of Fleer. Still hard.
Yeah. Thank you, Welsh people.
Was some kind of king of Britain who was hanging out in his court looking at the sea with, he had his two brothers, his brother by his dad, Manawithan, and his two brothers by his mother, Nisian and Evnisian, because his mom got sick of names and just added a prefix to one. And then it goes on about noble genealogy of all the noblemen hanging out with them, and then goes to explain that Nisian, one of the brothers by his mom, is a really nice and gentle boy, but Evnisian sucked real hard. And he liked to cause trouble between the brothers when they were otherwise feeling pretty peaceful. So after this bit of prologue, the king, who's still looking out at the ocean, sees 13 ships coming from the south of Ireland, and he commands his men to get equipped and go see what this is all about, and just be ready for poking people with weapons.
No nonsense.
Yep.
Just good fights.
Set swords to poke.
So these were really gorgeous, like Dolnanian ships with satin flags and all kinds of descriptors.
How many gilded?
So many. At least one. At least one gilded.
Plus one.
And they were coming with their shield pointed upward in a symbol of peace. And so some messengers go and meet the king and introduces themselves as messengers of the king of Ireland, Matthew. Yeah, Matty boy. Matthew. Come to create an alliance by marrying Branwen, who is the daughter of Fleer and the sister
Branwen
of this king. So they have a long meeting because, just so you know, the alternate title for this story, and I cut a lot of this out, is a bunch of kings can't make decisions by themselves and have to have long meetings and councils for every moment.
So, why is that a story? That's just real.
It is real, but it drags when you're trying to note through it. So this is the first of many meetings, and that the end result of this meeting is that Branwen is in fact going to get married to Matthew.
Good time party boy.
Yes.
Matthew and Brandy.
Wait, can you not... Is Branwen too hard?
No, it's fine.
You just want to be consistent with the editing style?
I just want to be consistent with the appropriation.
With the teen romance recasting of this tale.
The Anglicization.
I'm like Woolsey over here, translating Final Fantasy. Spoony Bard.
And just so you know, Branwen is super hot, just in case there was any question about this.
Oh, thank God.
I assumed. If she wasn't, I would not be listening to this story.
If she wasn't, what are we even talking about?
So they plan the wedding at Aberfraw, and then they go to the wedding.
Yeah.
Check.
Yep, that's the right. It's the right order.
And then they eat and carouse, and I guess somewhere in that, the actual wedding part happens. Because that night she becomes his wife, probably by the power of his penis.
What?
Like, there's never a description of a wedding.
Maybe it was happening during the carousing.
They feast, and then that night she becomes his wife.
They just kind of touch their things together.
Yeah.
And they become married.
They had a downstairs kiss.
Yeah. That's what that's called.
Title of the episode.
A downstairs kiss. A brief, fleeting downstairs kiss.
Okay, so this is... So many things are very confusing to me in this story. And I don't know if it's like a cultural thing.
You just go through it and we'll make up what we need to.
So the next day, the officers of the court began to equip and range the horses and attendants in order all the way to the sea. So I don't know if they just like got these horses and these people all dressed up and then put them in a line.
Yes.
But that's what it sounds like. So
they did that.
They did. Okay. Thank you for clarifying, Tyler.
In what order? What is their sorting algorithm?
Descending.
They did not.
By height.
Height or rank?
Height. Definitely.
Or both.
Well, rank is based on height. Yeah.
Okay. So taller is higher ranked.
Uh-uh.
The other way?
Yep.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's how Napoleon was made.
Smaller targets. They don't die as easy.
Exactly.
Their heart doesn't have to work as hard to pump blood through like 8 feet of meat.
And the taller men and horses can stand in the ocean without drowning.
Yeah, it's a good system.
You guys are great tacticians.
That's how you win wars.
And I need my tallest men and horses to swing swords at boats in the ocean. Just chop those boats down.
Get them. Go get them.
So Evnissian, the quarrelsome brother, shows up one day and he sees these horses all lined up. Because I guess they stayed lined up for multiple days. And he's like, whose horses are these? And everyone says, oh, they're Matthew. Maddie boys.
Yeah.
The king of Ireland who wed Branwen. And so Evnissian, who is like, I guess, a half-brother to Branwen, maybe a full brother, gets pissed that his sister got married without his consent.
Invited to the drive-by wedding.
And apparently also not the long council about marrying her. And so he gets revenge by cutting off the horse's lips to the teeth, their ears to their heads, their tails to their backs, and any eyelids he could grab So just like random eyelids.
Every single one of the horses?
To the bone, yes.
And no one stopped him in the process.
No, they all just like stare at him do it. Well, the first one, you'd probably be a little shocked.
Halfway through the first one, because that's a lot of things to cut.
It's true.
You know,
as soon as he grabbed the horse's lips, I'd be suspect.
I do think if you could get through two or three of them, I would start to assume that they're supposed to be doing that. Like, if they're just going down the line, cutting them all, like, at first it'd be like, hold on, this seems wrong. But, like, three horses later, go, oh, okay, this must just be routine.
So you think that people stumbled on him doing this when he was, like, four horses deep?
Yeah, when he was, like, four horses down the line, they go, oh, okay, he's supposed to be doing that. He's got a clipboard out. Everything looks routine here.
Yeah, if you do something with enough confidence, no one really questions.
And that includes flensing a horse. And eyelids. What happens if your eyelids get cut off? Do you, like...
You can't use them.
Blink.
You can't blink, but yeah. Do your eyes pop out?
No, your eyelids
they
don't...
They shrivel up, because they're not wet.
Oh, you just have to, like, use moisturizing drops?
Out. Yeah.
All the time?
But yeah, or lick them.
Your eyes are attached.
Horses can do that, right?
Horses are...
like lizards?
Yeah, they do. Those big floppy tongues that they got, they just... It's like a windshield wiper across the face.
Maybe they can have a horse buddy system where they lick each other's eyeballs.
And that's why you always see horses in pairs.
Yeah, they're just, they heard about this
they're fearful
incident
for the day that they'll lose their eyelids.
Because they're practicing, slurping on their eyes.
This is the story that mom horses tell their baby horses to scare them into being good, but it causes a lot of horse complexes later. Which is why horses are spooked by so many things.
Never lose your gallop, buddy, or you'll lose your eyelids.
And then your eyes.
Okay, so...
dried horse eyeball, though, very profitable on the black market.
So, witches are into it.
So Methuic gets word of his horse's disfigurement, and also that this disfigurement was meant specifically as an insult to him. And he says, I'm really confused, because if these people here wanted to insult me, why'd they give me this hot chick to marry?
On the one hand, that's fair. But on the other, this is an important lesson about locking your horses up, which all other kings do.
Don't just put them in a line.
If you look at history, the shape of nations is usually made by who puts their stuff away and who doesn't. Like, who locks the thing up so people can't take it, and who just leaves it out.
Folks, that's the whole ballgame.
There are...
We've been playing it for centuries.
There are two kinds of people in this world. There are putters and and there are leavers. And I'm really just borrowing this from a British comic named John Richardson, but he's very correct. If you ask a king, where are your horses? He will either say they are locked away where I put them, or I don't know, they're wherever I left them. They're running free for all.
I don't know, licking each other's eyeballs maybe.
Probably. And the ones who put their horses under lock and key, those are the rulers of the world today.
Okay, so he questions why these people would insult him after giving him a hot lady to marry, and his messengers are like, man, shit, we don't know, but obviously it's an insult, so we need to, like, get on these ships and leave this place. And so they do.
Branwyn as well?
Yeah. So word gets to Bendigeid Vran, the king of Britain, that Methuic is quitting his court without any leave, and so he sends messengers to ask what that's about. So now we get deep politics. They send back the message that he's been insulted, but is also really confused about the whole wife situation. And then the messengers respond back that it wasn't the will of the court to insult him, and the person who did it is royalty, so nothing we can do.
A little late for the bureaucracy.
So Bendigeid Vran does not really know what to do about this whole situation, because the kings in the story cannot make a decision on their own. It's always the messengers who tell them what to do. So the messenger tells him, well, maybe we...
That's like... that's a metaphor for the shadow government.
Yeah. Yeah, you're onto something.
Kings don't do shit. So it's these secret folks that tell them what to do.
So the shadow government suggests that maybe he send them some kind of like, sorry we flayed every horse you own gift.
Just the face, though.
No, it's tails, too.
Well, they still run, right?
They still can carry out their primary function, which is get you from point A to point B.
What is the Amazon classification?
For horse?
Yeah, for these horses.
Like, what category would you find them under?
Yeah, are they like new? Are they used?
Oh, I thought you meant like...
They're heavily damaged.
Like, are they in toys and games or clothing? Is there a beasts of burden section on Amazon?
The resale value.
I think heavily used at this point.
Yeah, used deplorable.
They are missing pieces, which is usually not good.
Vital pieces, though, they still run. They still operate.
They do. Maybe it is mostly cosmetic. I don't know.
Granted, they can't hear commands anymore.
But they can feel them, and they drive sure a horse by kicking it in the side anyway.
Yeah, not telling it, good job, horse.
Their Carfax report does just not look good.
It's overall, like, insurance on them is a real hassle.
So these horses are totaled.
Yeah, these are totaled horses. All right, so after being told what to do by his messengers, Bendigeid decides to give the Irishmen the gift of one horse for every horse that they ruined. And also a staff of silver as tall as the king and a plate of gold the size of his face. And also just let him know it was my dickhead brother who did this. It was done against my will and without my knowledge, but he is my brother, so it's going to be pretty hard for me to put him to death. But we would love to make peace with you in spite of this.
I mean, that's a good faith gesture, I think.
So when Methoic gets word of this, he takes another council to decide whether it's acceptable. And they decide, sure.
Yes. Equal horses plus stuff.
So they have a whole another feast meeting. But Methoic seems more bummed than before, and Bendigeid Vran is worried that it's because the atonement he's made is too small, and he offers to do more if Methoic wants him to. So this part of the story is basically like two kings are horribly worried about insulting each other, while one guy is not worried at all in cutting up horses.
Don't it always seem to go?
And that's politics.
It's an interesting dynamic that they have. I'll say that.
So Bendigeid Vran, because Methoic does not immediately jump on this offer, gives the specific offer of this magic cauldron he has that, you know, you can put, if one of your guys gets killed, you can just shove him in this cauldron, heat it up, and then the man will come back to life, but just not able to say any words.
Okay. Interesting drawback.
Yeah, he can't speak, but he'll take commands. So Methoic is pretty excited about this prospect, and the next day they give him this, and they sit down to yet another dinner, where Methoic asks where Bendigeid Vran happened to come across this cauldron. And according to the notes on this story, the cauldron bears a remarkable similarity to some of the magical powers shown by the Tuatha De Danann, which are... A necromancer race that invaded Ireland.
I remember that.
They're an otherworld race that eventually became, in later folklore, fairies. And just as a side note for our big Book of Doug, they have...
There's no recording of us classifying... The Ur story as the Book of Doug. So we should probably just do that now, in case people are confused.
When we say Book of Doug.
Yeah, the Book of Doug refers to the overarching mythos that we are discovering.
The Tuatha De Danann have rivals who are called the Fomorians, and the Fomorians represent the destructive side of nature, and they live underground. So we have yet another confirmation of the Seelie on Seelie court dynamic. So anyway, the king tells him that the cauldron came from Ireland, so it's only right that he should send it back. It was given him by Flasser and Lasser Flegavnivid.
Yep, sounds right.
Who came here from Ireland with his wife, Cumide Cumainvolth.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
Sounds correct.
And they escaped an iron house in Ireland when it was made red hot around them. And also, I find it weird, since you're from Ireland, that you haven't heard about this whole thing.
Those Irish.
So Matty Boy says, oh yeah, and now that you mention it,
I certainly have,
I happen to have a whole side story about this. I was hunting in Ireland one day when I came across a mound at the Lake of the Cauldron and saw a huge yellow-haired man with a cauldron on his back. He was big and also ugly, and a lady followed him, and I asked him where they were going. Behold, the big guy says, this lady is going to have herself a baby in about a month or so, and this baby is going to be a boy and a warrior, and he's going to be fully armored when he's born.
It's a good birth announcement.
Babies need hype men.
I think they do, because I think a lot of the people who are going to be dealing with them most need some encouragement.
Definitely.
They need reasons to be excited.
This baby will be great. This baby will do great things.
It's going to come out.
Baby's going to change your life for the better.
He's going to come out fully armored. Don't focus on that so much.
So, yeah, just like...
get an epidural.
Bit of advice for those of you getting ready to announce a pregnancy. Start it with behold and then follow it up with a list of great achievements that your baby's definitely going to accomplish.
If your baby's not a warrior, I don't really want to hear about it, though.
I want to see an influx of Facebook pictures of... sonogram photos of babies holding swords and shields, and the caption being simply behold.
Yep, that would get me excited about a baby. I would be ready to have that child in my life at a distant capacity. Okay,
a Facebook relationship with that baby.
Yeah. So the Irish king took these folks with him and kept them with him for a year. But after about a year, his people started complaining that they were there because after, 4 months into this year-long residency with the king of Ireland, the two of them made themselves hated pretty universally.
What about the baby, though?
Probably also hated. They were disorderly, they molested and harassed the nobles and the ladies, and so the King of Ireland's people rose up and demanded that I choose between these two layabouts or...
Punch and Judy.
His entire people.
Who are Punch and Judy?
These two.
These new?
Hmm?
New people?
The baby people.
Yeah, the guy with the cauldron on his back and the pregnant lady. Okay. So the... people of Ireland have now said it's us or them, and to make a decision between two folks and a baby he picked out of a lake, or...
gotta call a council.
Yep, he does.
I love the mental image of these kings fretting over these simple decisions. Oh, tough one. Tricky. Ooh, just can't. Gotta have my friends in to tell me what to do.
Is phone a friend a thing you can do as a king, always?
Yeah, you should phone a friend.
Can you ask the audience?
I think. You have advisors and counselors for a reason.
Someone needs to tell me the pros and cons of this situation.
I wish I had that.
So the council was pretty quickly decided, we got to deal with these people, but then they had to decide specifically how, because they refused to leave, and for some reason violence was ineffective. I don't know if these were super strong, powerful people.
Their baby definitely is.
Oh yeah, definitely a warrior. They're probably I mean, they might be of the Tuatha De Danann race because they're carrying this magic cauldron and they have basically an Athena but with a penis baby.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So the council decided to make a room of iron for them.
Yep.
And I guess furnish it really nicely, so they wanted to go in there. And once they were, they heated it up. Also, they got the whole...
What is that House Hunters episode like? So I know what you're thinking. This is a slab of iron prison. But comes fully furnished.
And you with alcohol, because they got the whole family drunk first.
You hang a little bit of art on the walls, it's good to go.
I mean,
get a rug to really bring it all together.
They're clearly fey then, right?
Yeah.
If they're being encased in iron.
And getting drunk.
To trick them into going into the iron?
I think it's just a bonus to keep them there. And so they heated it up, but I guess they ended up escaping. Like, we didn't go in and check the bodies or whatever. So... I guess that's when they came here and gave you that cauldron. That's what I know. And Mendigard Vress says, yeah, that sounds about right.
That was a good yes and, King.
And when they came here, you know, I didn't give them a room or anything. I sent them through the kingdom. And they have multiplied and fortified my lands pretty well. So the two of them continued sitting and talking until sleep sounded better, and then the next day Methoic goes back to Ireland with Branwen, and everyone in Ireland gives her nice pretty things when they meet her, and she had a good time and also later a son. She named the son Gwern, and they gave him into foster nursing with the best men of Ireland, because damn if she's gonna raise him herself.
The best men of Ireland?
Yes,
the best. Are the nurses?
Yes. That way he'll grow up big and strong and know how to punch real good.
His name is what?
Gwern.
Gwern.
Gurgi?
Gwern. With an R?
Yeah.
Not Gwen?
Not Gwen. Gwern. And that's not listed as any of the weird diphthongs that I need to be aware of. So I think it's just straight.
They just like the sound of it.
Straightforward Gwern.
I'm going to remember that for... I would like a business where I get to name babies.
A business?
Yeah. If you need this service, I am available as a consultant for your baby name. I'll think of all the mean things they could be called in middle school. I'll just head that off, sniff out all the mean nicknames.
And don't forget about initials, because...
Initials, yeah. Like if you accidentally name your kid like ass or poo or something.
We were talking. One of my coworkers is on the verge of becoming a father, and so we'd been talking about names as a whole work family. And one of my other coworkers knew someone who had the initials VAG.
Yeah.
And it just was not a good time for her.
These are things that I can warn you about.
Chaboy was saddled with TP as a child, so not as bad as it could be, but not great either.
I had AC, and so people would make air conditioning jokes, which were really kind of weak.
That's stretching a little bit.
It is. It's like, we gotta make fun of you somehow.
We gotta dig at something. How do you feel about cool, wet air?
I don't know. I don't think anybody squeezed anything meaningful out of JGM.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. And I don't know if our listeners know this. I don't go by my first name. I go by my middle name.
I go by my last name. In case the AC was confusing too.
Yeah.
So together we form a full name.
Yeah. You got the last name. I got the middle one. You got the first one.
Uh-huh. We're all normal when we work as a unit.
Tyler Gordon Carmen.
That's not a terrible name.
It's got the N's on the end of two of them.
And that's our Megazord.
That's awkward.
Yeah.
Gordon.
Well,
Carmen
I have Amanda Carmen. I have a Nicole breaking it up in the middle, but
yeah, that's another N. This is what I'm talking about. You don't want to alliterate your kids' names.
Hey, guys.
And all of my names have six letters, so I am also secretly the devil.
Guys, what are your socials? Just curious.
Social security number?
Yeah.
It's the same as my bank card. It's just eights.
I don't have
just eights straight across.
I don't have one anymore because a Nigerian prince needed one, so I gave it to him.
Well, that was generous of you.
Yeah. So I don't actually have a social security.
But it's gonna come around and be bank in the end.
Oh, I know. He's gonna pay me some serious money for this once he uses it to make his fortune.
I don't think I've said my first name on the show, but tweet at me and let me know what you think it is. Starts with a J.
Well, that'll be a fun game.
It's gonna be like your first guess. It's very basic.
That'll be a fun game for everyone.
For me.
All right.
Not for you. Just for me.
So in the second year of this marriage, there was tumult in Ireland because of the insult that Matholwch received in Cambria, which I guess word of the horse flaying came around really slowly to Ireland, mm-hmm. and then they got mad on his behalf. And Matholwch's foster brothers blamed him openly for the whole insult. I don't really know
blamed
what's happening.
Recipient?
Yeah.
The insult for the insult?
Yeah, I think they victim blamed him for receiving this insult. I don't know. They just say his foster brothers.
I was going to say, yeah, okay, why do I care what his foster brothers think?
But they don't qualify the his, and Matholwch is the most recent person talked about, uh-huh. so I think they're his foster brother. I don't know. This part doesn't make a lot of sense. But they decided that they needed to avenge themselves by driving Branwen away from his chamber, making her a cook at court, and then when the butcher delivered meat every day, having him just, like, hit her.
With the meat.
Just like smack her.
After he delivered the meat.
Yeah, he's
like
gonna,
as a parting gift.
Yeah, he's gonna bring her the meat and deal her a blow to the ear, specifically.
Is there a way to get pound and meat into one sentence here? Is that too crass? Is it good?
I think
yep.
It's good.
Yep, that's a fully formed joke you just made there.
Yep.
Pound that meat ear.
He pounded... Yeah, he did.
The ear meat.
The ear meat. He pounded the ear meat.
So, Matholwch doesn't make this decision, but he also doesn't make any other decisions, so it just kind of stands, and his men tell him, hey, just so you know, don't let any of those Cambrian louts come over here. And if any of them come, you need to imprison them so they won't hear about how Branwen's being treated. Because we know we're doing her a shit deal here. And if it gets back to her brothers, it'll be bad for us.
Rather than not do the shit deal anymore.
Right. So Matholwch, who I guess does not care about Branwen at all, or is just so chronically incapable of making a decision that he goes along with whatever anyone tells him to do, keeps people from Cambria out of his land for 3 years.
Did they trick him into thinking he was in a council meeting when they told him?
Possibly. Or maybe that he doesn't need to be. Maybe just anyone who brings a decision to him, he's like, yes, that, please.
As
just,
long as it's more than one person.
Just don't make me decide. Also, what am I having for dinner tonight? So, in the 3 years of her daily ear-beating cook servitude imprisonment, Branwen reared a little starling under the cover of a feeding trough and taught it to speak and told it all about her brother.
It's a bird?
Yeah.
Doesn't she have a son?
Yeah, but she gave him to foster care. Or like,
didn't
nurses.
Didn't have her own boy she can teach
she's
to speak.
She's a bird surrogate?
Yeah.
just to get her motherhood fix.
And then she wrote a letter, bound the letter to the bird's wing, which seems like a bad way to deliver a letter.
Especially with a bird that talks.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah.
It does seem like there's a more straightforward way to do that.
And then she sends the bird to Britain to bring word of her troubles to her brother. So when Bendigrid Wren got the letter, he was upset, and there's like a whole... The bird doesn't speak at all.
Mm-hmm. Despite knowing how.
Yeah, they just see a bird and they're like, this one seems tame. And then they see a letter tied to its wing and they're like, I guess it is. And then they read it.
Lucky guess. This letter explains why we've all been banished from that country.
So he's,
I was curious about that.
He's mad and he calls to his aid 74 countries, and then they have another council to decide.
What do we do about this?
That they're going to go to Ireland and they're going to leave 7 princes with Caradoc, the son of Bran, as the chief of them all. So in Edmian, where these men left, and for this reason, 7 knights were placed in the town. The names of these 7 men were Caradoc, the son of Bran, Hevith, Hir, and at this point I just gave up trying to translate these names because they don't come up again. It doesn't matter. Those are 7 people. Also, Bendigeid Vran goes with them, and he's the point of this whole rest of the story. So these 7 names just don't make any difference, even though Caradoc is the chief amongst these men. So they all go to Ireland, they come to the shoal waters, and they put their provisions on their back and start walking. And some swineherds see this, and they're confused by it, and they run to Matholwch and tell him that they saw a wood on the sea where they've never seen woods before. There were no trees there before, and then there was a vast mountain beside the wood, which moved, and there was a lofty ridge on top of the mountain and a lake on each side of the ridge. And the wood and the mountain and all of these things moved. And the king is confused by this, as was I.
This is out at sea?
This is what the swineherds saw, or reporting that they saw when Bendigeid Vran and his men came ashore.
What they saw...
The Irish swineherds witnessed this whole army landing... Mm-hmm. And this is how they decided to interpret that information to the king.
Great.
And the king is very confused. And it took me like 6 or 7 readings to figure out what was going on here. So I'm with him on this. And he decides that the only person who's going to know how to interpret this is Branwen for some reason.
Great. Glad we're all on the same page now.
So he goes to, or he sends people to go ask Branwen what
to go hold counsel with Branwen.
Yeah. And she's like, it's my Avengers, bitches!
She puts on her Nick Fury eye patch and says, Avengers assemble.
Goes to town.
And I say, okay, well, can you like translate this whole peasant speak for us? What are they talking about with the wood? And she says, yeah, that's the masts of the ships.
It's called boats, baby!
And I ask, well, what's the mountain? And she says, that's my brother. Bendigeid Vran.
He's a very big man.
He's basically a mountain. And they're like, what's the lofty ridge with the lake on each side? And she said, the lakes are his eyes and the ridge is his nose.
Yeah.
So I guess he's huge. So the Irish warriors and chiefs have their own council and then decide to retreat past the river and take down the bridge after them so that no one can cross it. So, Bendigeid Vran and
Are they scrumming everywhere?
Scrumming?
Yeah, are they just huddled up and chatting and running at the same time everywhere that they go?
To make all the decisions. So Bendigeid Vran comes to the river that has no bridge anymore, and he asks his bros, hey, what do we do about this? And they say, well, he who will be chief, let him be the bridge, which is apparently now a proverb. So Bendigeid Vran lays across the river, hurdles are placed upon him, and all of his host passed over him, using him as a bridge. When he stood up, Matholwch's messengers show up, because I guess they heard all of the commotion of a bunch of people crossing a human man over a river. And they say, hey, buddy, we just want you to know King Im over here has given the whole country of Ireland to his son, Gwern, who, if you might recall, is your nephew slash your sister's son. And we think that that should make up for this whole, you know, debacle with Branwen and the beatings and all that. Isn't that awesome? Also, King Im, like, he'll stay here on Ireland, or he'll come back to your place, however you want it. So I guess they just surrender. Kind of.
Immediately.
Yeah.
No bridge required.
So we're like building up to this huge battle, and we instead had...
And like the rest of the story, it ends in anticlimax.
So we have our shadow government show up and calm things down. So Bendik and Vren looks at them and responds, "Shall I not myself have your kingdom? Then perhaps I'll have a council about what to do about your message." But until
that... Only if I can have official council.
I appreciate the priorities.
But until I get that offer, I'm not having the council and you'll get no answer from me. So the messengers go back to Methavik and say, "Hey, Bendik and Vren wants a better message from you." So Methavik asks for a council of his own.
This is like a more boring Aaron Sorkin show.
Yeah, it's a lot of walk and talk.
It's only walk and talk. There's no other shots.
There's nothing in between those scenes.
It's one take. It's a single shot. Everybody's walking and talking.
And so they bring up a minor detail from like way back earlier in the story when the King of Ireland and Bendik and Vren were like having feasts. They were having them outside because Bendik and Vren didn't like being in houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so the messengers point out that he's never been known to be in a house because no house can contain him because apparently he's the size of a mountain. So maybe we could make him a nice house.
Like a mountain house?
Yeah. Like a mountain. Cool cabin.
Are these the people that made the iron house for Punch and Judy?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I think houses is the council's normal solution to things.
Just get them a good house.
Seek out the property brothers.
This is like...
What should we do? What is our house-based solution?
Like the housing agency... I just blanked on the word for giving lots of money to a government to get
lobbyists.
This is the group of lobbyists for the housing association.
Think of the jobs. So many jobs to build this house for this mountain man.
So they give this message to Bendik and Vren, who then has another council, and they decide to accept it. So the house is built, but it's like a Trojan horse house.
It's on wheels?
No, it's got a regular house, but
on it's the shape of a horse.
It's a regular house, but on each pillar inside the house, they've put brackets with leather bags in each bracket and an armed man in each bag.
For what purpose?
Murder.
To
maybe.
Murder the mountain man in his own home?
I'm waiting maybe to see murder. What explanation there is for this.
Hey, so do you remember...
Is it the shape of him? It's probably not.
It's just a house.
It's but the shape of his body.
Yeah, I like to imagine this is like a fully manned Iron Maiden for a giant person.
So that's not really a house. That's more of a...
an outfit.
Kind of a wooden power suit.
But full of tiny people that are going to stab you to death.
Full of small angry men.
So do you remember Evnissun?
Nope.
No,
sure didn't don't. Come up with a name for that one.
Sure don't.
Evnissun is the shitty brother who flayed all the horses. I had to also look back at it by
his,
this point.
His oh, name that's right. His name is Tronk now.
What happened to those horses? That's what I want to know.
They went to a happy farm.
Full of lipless horses.
Run by a very big-hearted charity organization.
Maybe they got like some kind of rubber, like the things that go on windshield wipers, just wrapped around their mouths to compensate, to help them eat and do stuff.
What's the best part of the horse to get the glue from?
Hooves.
So they still got those.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where does... How?
I was just hoping it wasn't the lips and ears.
Is it really bones? Why does it... We don't have to look it up. Let's just speculate.
We don't need science. This is a fairy tale podcast.
We keep taking breaks to look up real information. If it's bones, surely they could get that from other animals. It has
collagen
to be
collagen taken
else.
From animal parts, particularly horse hooves and bones.
Why does it have to be the bones? Why does it have to be horses?
I mean, that's they also where the, gelatin comes from.
They got the stickiest bones? Marrow. Yeah.
Why can't we use anybody else's bones then?
Well, we can.
Then why don't we?
I don't know. Horses were a ready source for... I don't think we use horses for glue anymore.
Do we not? Where do we get our glue? Who's making America's glue? If not American horses. Is it China?
That's probably just awful from, like, the cow farms and things.
It's space sticky.
That sounds good.
Elmer's makes it from synthesized chemicals.
It's lazy.
So petroleum, natural gas, other raw materials, no animals or animal parts. So Elmer's glue is vegan?
Cool. Good to know. Now I can eat it.
Finally.
I'm not vegan, nor do I want to eat glue. No part of that holds up.
Okay, so Shitty Brother is, he comes in before the rest of his people do.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees the bags. So apparently they're not,
not great.
Not sneaky pull bags.
Are they kicking around and writhing to breathe?
They are leather.
Are they sealed bags?
They are
with
leather.
Men inside?
And these men are armored. So I imagine that's
swords
deeply uncomfortable.
Out.
Right. So he sees the bags and he's like, what the hell's in these? And the Irishmen who are in the house, they say it's meal. And so Evnissian's response to this is to feel around the bag, which I guess immediately alerts him to what's going on.
Just give a meal feel.
So he feels until he gets to the man's head in the bag, and then he squeezes his hand until he could feel his fingers meet together in the brain between the bone.
Tronk is very strong.
Yes, he is.
Very strong man.
He does this for each of the 200 bags, but one. This last head was armed.
Hold on. Yeah. Again? He does this again.
He does this 199 times.
No, that's what I mean. This is the guy that did the horse thing.
Yeah.
No, why does nobody stop him in the middle of these process?
Well, the thing is, he's going to each bag and he's asking what's in it, and the Irishmen are saying meal each time.
And crying profusely
as
their
countrymen
are
getting squished
in the brain.
He's very confident.
I imagine a sing-songy voice every time he walks up to a bag. What's in this? Squish. What's in this?
He is a pretty terrifying villain. He's very low-key.
Yeah, but stoppable.
He's like Loki, like, the Norse god of legend, except very, very haltable.
If anyone tried at all.
One stab wound, and he's probably done.
Not even a stab wound, just a word. Stop.
Why?
What are you doing?
Why? The last head was armed, but he kept at it until he did this, the same thing to him, too. So mm-hmm. It was just like... Number 200 was a little tougher, but he still managed.
Good to know that detail.
Then he sang a little song to himself.
Were his fingies tired?
Probably. And when he finishes singing his little song, the Irishmen and the people of... I am assuming this is Britain. They keep calling it the Island of the Mighty.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very beginning, he was in England, so...
Probably.
They came in and they talked and they bestowed the sovereignty on the boy, which I am assuming is the aforementioned son, Gwern. So then peace happened and the boy went to embrace a bunch of people. And the Shitty Brother's like, well, where's my boy hug? Or if you want the verbatim.
Where's Tronk hug?
The verbatim from the story is, wherefore, said Evnissian, comes not my nephew, the son of my sister, unto me? Though he were not the king of Ireland, yet willingly would I fondle the boy.
Hold on.
I thought you might appreciate the verbatim.
Well, we've seen how he fondles.
I don't...
it ends in a squishy head.
That's definitely a crime.
And then, kind of as an aside to himself, Evnissian chuckles, no one suspects the slaughter I will this instant commit.
No one suspects. I don't have a history or anything.
So the boy comes to him, and he grabs the boy by the feet and lifts him up and throws him into the fire before anyone has a chance to do anything. Branwen sees her son in the fire, and she tries to throw herself in also, but Vindigan Bran grabs her with one hand and a shield with the other hand, and then, like, all hell breaks loose. And then some guy, I don't know who the heck this guy is, I didn't really, it's a long name, and I think I would have noticed it before, but I didn't, but his name's, this is for you, Carl, with a C.
Go for it.
Morthuid Salthian. He shouts, "The gadflies of Morthuid Falthian's cow!" And then everyone grabs arms and they start beating each other and murdering.
That was the code.
And then Bindigid Bran is fighting, and he's supporting Branwen between his shield and his shoulder while he fights with his free arm.
That's uncomfortable sounding.
Yeah. And the Irish folk light up their magic gift cauldron from before. And they start throwing their dead men into that.
Rise, my necromantic army.
Start blazing the cauldron.
And so the dead bag soldiers are coming out, able-bodied and ready to fight, just not able to speak. And Evnissian watches this happen, and then he starts, like, feeling regret for what he's done. I guess he didn't expect his mischief to have negative consequences.
Trunk, sorry.
but he says, "Oh, woe is me that I should have caused such big problems for my homeland. I better do something about it." And so he pretends to be a dead Irishman. So they pick him up and throw him into the cauldron. And when he gets in there, he stretches himself out into it. And he breaks it into four pieces, and in the process bursts his own heart and dies. So he sacrifices himself to attempt...
No more zombies!
...to save the world from a zombie apocalypse. So this helped a little bit, but in the end, the Island of the Mighty couldn't be victorious. Only 7 people escaped with their lives, plus Bindigid Vran, who got a poison dart in his foot... Plus Branwen, who doesn't count.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Someone had it on him. That's fine.
Branwen also survived, but is not mentioned as one of the 7, because obviously she is not a person in the story, in spite of the story being the Mabinogi of Branwen. They escape, and Bendigid Vran says, "Hey, you guys should cut off my head and bury it in the White Mount in London, facing toward France. Because I'm going to die anyway. But before you bury it, you're going to be on the road a long time. You'll spend 7 years feasting in Harlech while Rhiannon's birds sing at you. And my head is going to be, like, rockin' company." It's just going to be, like, a head party all the way. And after that, you'll go to Gwales and Penroe. And you'll be there for 40 years, and you can remain there, and my head's gonna hang out with you, not rotting or anything, like, totally fine.
It'll be chill.
And still, like, super fun to hang out with, until you open the door that looks toward Aberhevenvillain and toward Cornwall. And once you've opened that door, you're done. You're done with party times. You can't tarry anymore. You have to go to London and bury my head. So.
Them's the rules.
Yep. So without any further questions, they cut off his head. And the 7 of them walk on with Branwen. And Branwen looks back toward both Ireland and the Island of the Mighty, and then dies of a broken heart because she destroyed them both. They bury her.
The end.
Not quite. So, as predicted, they go party for 7 years, they go have a grand time at the Gwales in Penbrough, and the head was indeed fine company, so they called these 40 years the entertaining of the noble head. And just by the way, the earlier years where they were in Ireland was called the entertaining of Branwen and Matholwic, because they realized, I guess at this point, that this is the Mabinogi of Branwen, so we should just, like, find a way to mention her one more time.
Probably.
So then one of them decides he's going to open the magic door thing, and he does, and then they remember all the bummer stuff that happened to them and all the people that died, and they go and bury the head. And apparently the head protects the shores from invaders. So good on them. In Ireland, just only 5 pregnant women in a cave in the wilderness were left alive.
Oh man!
From something.
That's a full reboot.
They said the Island of the Mighty wasn't victorious, but apparently they were pretty victorious.
Pretty close.
Because 7 of them made it out. 8 if you count Branwen as a human. 9 if you count Bendigeid for like the couple moments before poison cut him. So these women birthed 5 sons on the same night. And the sons grew up.
And then the world ended. Because there was no one else to have sex with.
The sons grew up into 5 strapping lads, and they did think on the problem of what do we do for wives, so they, like, trade moms.
Who wants to fuck my boy? So, let's trade boys around.
So they don't marry their own moms, they marry the mothers of the other guys, so that there's no gene mixing.
And that's where the Ballad of Stacy's Mom comes from.
Yep.
It's where Fountains of Wayne got the idea.
And then they peopled the island of Ireland, and that's why it's divided into fifths, the end.
Great. Great story.
Thanks, Carl, with a C. Okay, so there was a lot of, like, council that I cut out. Of that.
Oh, even more.
I can believe that.
Because, like, the structure of the story was they had a council to decide what they did, and then it described them doing exactly that, so I cut a significant chunk out of this.
Can it be assumed that that happened every time
any decision
needed to be made?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Except when the decision is, should I cut up these horses? Yes, no. Yes, obviously.
Council time aside, am I alone in thinking that this had whiffs of Greek stories in it.
Whiffs like of Greek stories?
Greek epics, yeah.
No, you're not wrong.
There seemed to be elements of Troy. There seemed to be elements of the Odyssey at the end.
There's definitely Troy with Branwen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
There was a Trojan horse.
Yeah.
That's the biggest. They stole that, for sure.
For a mountain-sized man. Which man was that again?
He was the king of Britain.
Did he get a name?
Bendigeid Vran.
Oh, that's that one.
Mm-hmm.
Poisonfoot?
Yeah.
Even dumber then, if he was the size of a mountain and a dart took him down.
Yeah, it's
unless that's Achilles.
Yeah, it's an Achilles thing. I was going to mention that because there's a Norse. It has some Norse elements too. We've got a Loki figure.
Sure.
Trunk Loki.
Same number of letters.
We have like it was a was the holly branch to the foot. That killed that guy?
Norse man.
It was... Was it holly? First of all.
I thought it was holly.
Could have been mistletoe.
Oh, it might have been mistletoe. It was one it was one of the Christmas ones.
I don't think it was holly. I'm pretty sure it was mistletoe. And I don't remember where it hit him.
Foot as a weak point for an otherwise infallible hero.
Achilles.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this. I don't want to go on too much of a historical tangent because I haven't looked this up and I don't want to do too much Googling live. Depending on how this story got here, it could have been brought over because the Celts made a whole sweep across Europe before they ended up in Ireland, so they could have brought with them a lot of those kinds of stories. But who knows?
We don't often hear stories that are the reboot of a country, like a nation.
Or that have this much historical grounding.
Sure.
That's not why we're here.
Well, specifically, I mean, we typically hear stories that are like the origin point of something.
Yeah.
Like this explains why this is. This was a story where everyone died and they started over. It was the same nation, but they just started over.
It's a very British Isles kind of story, though. That's how they like to do it. There's a lot going on. I feel like questions are not going to get us anywhere. There are too many that could be asked.
I guess it's mostly just juggling who is who.
Yeah,
that was a big struggle.
The broad strokes of the events are fine, I think. Like, they were easy enough to follow.
Yeah.
It's just I didn't know who was who or why they cared about each other.
Well, yeah, and right. there were also, like, a lot of dead ends in the story.
Yeah.
Like, I cut the long descriptions of the genealogy and the noblemen, because I know that was important to the people of the time, like, mm-hmm. who was birthed of who. But it bore no bearing on the story. I think the seven men whose names I stopped caring about just happened to be the same seven men later. And I'm sure their
That's why they were called out.
Right. And I'm sure their names will appear later in the Mabinogion, which I hope not to read for a very long time. But who knows? Maybe not, because the first branch was Pwick. It's the double L sound, which just doesn't have an English equivalent. And this was supposed to be the second branch.
Unrelated. Largely.
I don't remember any of these characters named in that one. But who knows? Maybe this was that kid that got stolen.
Could be.
I do love the image of these kings who are constantly worried about what
upsetting each other,
right, and whether or not they have the right to be upset themselves, like mm-hmm. this just constant anxiety, while this one guy is like springing through fields cutting up horses and squishing men's heads.
Where'd the cauldron people go?
Yeah that's another dead end. That
they
cauldron
just, they just left.
I think it's kind of a cool turning point for that villain,
mm-hmm.
although it for me is a deeply unrealistic turning point for him.
I also didn't understand it.
I guess maybe his whole thing is loyalty to his country.
Which means no zombies allowed.
Well, it's like the Irishmen were reviving their soldiers, so there was no way to overcome them. And so he realized what he'd done, I guess.
Wasn't he Irish?
No, he's the half-brother to Bendigeid Vran.
Right.
And so, like, he caused a lot of trouble.
For the Irish.
For his own
people. For everyone.
Yeah, pretty much for everyone. The other brothers didn't matter.
Mm-mm.
The other, like, Nissian.
Didn't come up.
Didn't do anything.
He's fine.
What's his
council.
Face? Yeah.
Just part of the council.
Man, the messengers were the council half the time.
It's like Jedi. They all got names, but only two of them say or do anything.
But like his...
In all of those movies.
His driving force throughout the whole thing was kind of like a loyalty to his country and being deeply personally insulted by any perceived disrespect for him or his people.
Sure.
So, like, Branwen gets married to the King of Ireland, and I guess he was napping during that council meeting. So, yeah, he's not messing up his own brother's horses. He's messing up the Irish people's horses.
Right. He wasn't upset that it happened. He was upset that he wasn't invited.
Which is a little fair, although I don't think fair enough to warrant the response.
Maybe one or two horses.
It is not an appropriate reaction.
Which seems to be common for him. Like, he's just straight to horrendous violence each time. He's Dexter.
Which one?
The serial killer one.
Not the one with the lab.
Not the one who's very smart.
I don't think he's that smart. I think he's more methodical murderer who's trying to get his urges out in a way that's beneficial for him. And so, like, killing all the Irishmen in sacks, it was horrifying. It was really weird that no one stopped him. Uh-huh. But ultimately, it was protecting his people, he thought.
Yep.
Also, there were men on the horses that he flayed.
Who could have stopped him?
Who, like, owned the horses?
Did he chop off the men's lips and ears?
Also, horses.
And tails?
Horses have reflexes and, like, they pack a mean punch. They
probably would not sit through that.
They were stock still. Were they asleep? Maybe they were asleep.
Does he have some kind of reputation that would make these people not speak out against him?
Yeah, he crushed his men's skulls with his fingers casually. But, like, casually.
Do they all know this, and the story just didn't mention it? And when they see him coming, they just go, like, he could just crush all of our skulls. Maybe we should let him skin our horses or whatever.
Our fates are sealed. There is nothing we can do.
Like, there's no point in speaking out.
We must softly pray for mercy.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you, like, look on and you're just confused when he, like, grabs a horse by the lips.
Like, the first time.
What are you doing?
Maybe the second. And then not 200 times.
You're not confused by then. No, but like, he does that. First you're confused. Then you're shocked. You can't believe what you just witnessed. And he keeps doing it. And your shock sort of grows. And, like, you're getting ready to protest. And this man with, like, a fistful of horse parts just stares you coldly in the eye.
Oh, yeah. Was he keeping them?
That's a good question.
Or was he dropping them to the ground?
Discarding them on the sand? Or was he putting them in, like, his horse lips sack?
He just set up a barber shop?
Was he weaving them into a bag as he went?
Well, by the time you get over the initial shock and horror of what is happening, you are now staring at a man who is methodically flinching a horse, mm-hmm. staring you cold in the eye.
Making a quilt from the bits.
maybe at that point, like, unless you are a truly brave man, you just quietly wet your armor and hope that it doesn't move to you. And I would think if I was, like, I'm imagining the Irishman in the house as being more the messenger type people, like, not warriors themselves, more clerk style.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch this guy poke around a bag and then, like, squish a man's skull.
Sure. Was fight or flight not invented yet? Because no one did either. Ever.
Oh, you say maybe that just wasn't installed yet?
Yeah. Was that in the firmware?
It could have been
patched
in. Was that
patched in later?
Maybe this was the
That's why they needed to reboot Ireland.
Because
nobody had fight or flight.
That bug was discovered here. And then they all sent in bug reports. And then the developers went, oh yeah, we should probably, like, program in some kind of reaction to this.
So I've also, like, I've read joke posts and things from Englishmen and Irishmen, like, kind of poking fun at their own country's tendencies. So, like, forgive me if this is a horrible stereotype, but, like, politeness is really big. Apologizing all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think
that's well known, I think.
Yeah, there's a Twitter account for it.
Right. Well, what if that's, like, so ingrained in both these cultures?
They're all just collectively working up the nerve to say something, but hoping it
right.
will pass.
Like, well, look at these kings. They don't do a damned thing without asking the randos around them what they should do about it. Like, even to the point of accepting an offer made to them specifically. Like, is this a cool thing? Do I like this? And
you and like it.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the most indecisive group of people we've ever met in a folktale before. And then you have this one person who is violently decisive.
Yeah.
And they just don't know what to do with him.
I mean, he's living a good life. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, because no one, they're going to have to hold a council to figure out whether or not they should stop him.
And by the time they're done, he's moved on to whatever next atrocity he's committing.
And then the whole cycle starts over. Council begins anew. So that's my explanation for that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think if he is truly loyal to his country and just expresses that in horrendous ways,
they can overlook it.
The moment when he realizes that this cauldron thing is bad for his people, that would explain his sacrifice in the end and the turnabout. Which could be a very poignant part in the film adaptation of this.
The one and only poignant moment.
All you need is one. It comes right at the end, and yeah, that's it.
They're not going to show the whole movie at the Academy Awards. They're going to show a clip.
It's going to be this clip. We just have to convince them to give it an award without seeing it.
Yeah, this one's the Oscar bait movie where nothing happens until the big scene.
The climactic scene at the end.
So this is the Mabinogi of Branwen.
Yep.
Guys, it sure was.
You guys know anything about Branwen?
Not really. I might pick some up when I listen to this again in editing, which is where I'm going to figure out what happened in this story, because I can't remember any of it now.
Yeah, good luck. This is why it took me like 4 days to note this thing, once I finally sat down to do it. It's just a mess. Just a tangled mess. You should try reading.
Those are my people.
You should try reading the original.
No, thanks.
I'm good. I have read some... I've read some folklore and mythology from that part of the world. It is all like that.
Yep.
That is just how they like it over there.
Just tons of politics and apologizing.
I like, kind of across the board, I really like the ideas and like the flow of the stories happening. The presentation is awful.
Yes.
Like, it is always, always just a chore to read.
This dragged to read. I hope it wasn't too much of a drag to listen to. I tried to cut out the worst of it and emphasize more of the horse fleshing playing bits.
They like it.
And I added Tronk, so maybe you liked that.
You get Tronk.
Well, we got downstairs kissing and like all kinds of fun little nuggets.
Tell us what your favorite part was.
And also what happened.
Yeah. This is a good segue into that end part.
Everybody's favorite part.
That we do. Yeah, you should get in touch with us. That could be by tweeting at us or sending us a message on Facebook or emailing us. Or that's it.
Snapchat.
That's it. That's what you got. If you really want to do something else, you can ask. But
LinkedIn.
We don't have a LinkedIn or a Snapchat.
We all personally do.
I haven't updated mine in a while.
Yeah, you should get in touch with us. Send us a story. Send us your thoughts. Send us, I don't know, some advice. Ask for some advice. Do whatever you want.
If you have a story.
If you have a story.
Yep, I got kind of a backlog to get through now that this one's finally off my plate. So thank you for those of you who have suggested stories.
They're coming.
It may be a bit before Gordy and I have choice again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Do we have a couple coming up?
No, you have one.
Which is?
Well, we have a few suggested tales, although one of them...
Like what?
One of them...
Or we probably don't get to know, but...
I appreciate it. We got one from Catriona Richards about the a tale from Northeast England, but it's difficult to find like an actual story version of this. It's one of the issues with some folklore is, you know, these monsters and creatures that are really cool crop up, but there's no specific story. It's just that this thing happened and it is. So
it's a bestiary.
So sometimes it's hard for us to do those on our show. So like we appreciate the suggestions. If we don't get to them, it's just because it doesn't quite fit in our wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then we got one on Facebook, but I'm not on Facebook right now.
That's all right. You should still send them in though.
Yes, we will.
Or just get in touch.
Always room for more.
There are links to everything you need in the show description.
And we're on Patreon, and I'd like to thank our newest patrons. As our most new one is Mazin, Arn Thompson Type 1613, Playing Cards Are My Calendar and Prayer Book. We didn't dedicate this episode to you because obvious reasons. We will dedicate a
fresh one.
Yeah.
And one suggested by somebody else.
Right. We don't want you to have to share the limelight. So we will give you your dedicated episode later. But thank you so much. All right. Take us home, Gordy.
That's it.
Okay.
Goodbye. You did it.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Doug.
We're What the Folklore. That's how it works. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, hi-di-hi-di-ho, tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, happily ever after. Tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, hi-di-hi-di-ho, tra-la-di-di-hi-di-ho, she'll live happily ever after.
This has been What the Folklore. Thanks for listening to our show. If you have any feedback for us, you can leave it either by Gmail or Facebook. Our Gmail account is wtfolklore@gmail.com, and our Facebook page can be found at facebook.com/WTFolklore. Feel free to send in stories if you have any particularly odd pieces of folklore or mythology that you would like to hear us talk about. Special thanks to the Brobdingnagian Bards for the use of their song Happily Ever After from their album Brobdingnagian Fairy Tales.